as much as we can from her death, scratch that, sacrifice. Children die in nature all the time. This is just like that. But the one she kept returning to, was Holden's argument correct? She was, is, heir to the Empire, Elvie said. If Cortassa turned her into a lab rat, it might destabilize Laconia. Take away the clear line of succession? That's an awfully long game, Faez said, pulling on his shoes. It explains how Holden knew. But then why did he warn us? Couldn't go through with it, Elvie said. Holden's a decent person. Decent people have trouble with murdering children. Second thoughts, doubts, I don't know. I don't understand anything anymore. That's the thing about alien biologies and trans-dimensional monsters, Fires sighed. At least they're not supposed to make sense. Elvie sighed in agreement and looked at herself in the mirror. Her leg was healed, in that it didn't hurt, but the gouge the aliens had left in it still showed. A lighter patch of skin with a puckered edge. Pass me the cane, Fires asked, and then as she did, are you going to tell Trejo about it? I don't know. I'm not going to keep it from him. But Cortassa's dead and Holden's under guard. There's nothing for Trejo to do about it, and he's juggling enough already. How do I look? Do I look like a wrapped candy? I feel like I'm dressed up as a caramel chocolate. You look beautiful, Fires said, rising to his feet. You always do. Also, that you care at all what any of these people think is charming beyond words. What makes you think I care about what they think? She said. I asked you. He laughed and stepped close to her. She put her arms around his chest, leaned her head against his shoulder, closed her eyes. I hate this, she whispered. I hate all of this so much. I'm so tired of being scared and overwhelmed. I know. I'm a little adrenaline sick myself. Maybe we should leave. She chuckled. Tender my resignation. Sam exploring options elsewhere. Maybe go back to teaching. I'm serious, Fires said. You still have command codes for the Falcon, don't you? She pulled back to look him in the eyes. He wasn't joking. She knew all his smiles, and this was a serious one. There are two separate navies out there ready to shoot us down, she said. Maybe. Or maybe we could defect. Or just run and take our chances. It couldn't be worse. This place is made out of palace intrigue and fear as much as it is concrete, and that's before it was the target of an ongoing rebellion looking to nuke it to glass. Say you're going to look for residual trans-dimensional radioactive ectoplasm or something. They won't know. With the shooting war going on, they're not going to come after little old us. We could make a break for it. It was crazy. And worse, it was tempting. Elvie imagined waking up under some other sun, in a hut on a mountain, on a world without a name. You've worn it out since you got here, Fires said. You've put a brave face on it, and I have too. But this is killing you by centimeters. Let me think, she said. I'll think about it. They walked to the ballroom together. For a quinceañera, there weren't many teenagers. Even as large as the room was, Elvie felt like the air was close, stale, rebreathed. She got a glass of wine, hardly aware of who she'd gotten it from. Pulled by her exhaustion, trying to make sense of Holden, her fear of the fighting in the system and the beautiful dream of leaving Laconia behind, she was in a fog. Is everything all right? Teresa Duarte was at her side. Elvie had been aware the girl was speaking, but she hadn't listened. Fine. Everything's fine. Teresa smirked. Well, except... Yes, except... The dinner chime came, and Elvie tried to move away, but Teresa stayed at her side. The girl was working herself up to something. With a forced casualness, Teresa said, "I was wondering, Dr. Okoye, the falcon." Elvie felt a chill of fear. "What about it?" "I wondered how the repairs were going. With everything that's going on..." The girl put on a smile that was meant to be calming, innocuous. "I mean, it is built for sustained high burn. It has breathable liquid crash couches." "Those are unpleasant," Fayez said, trying to move the subject away. Teresa would not be turned aside. "But still, if the fighting got close, you'd be able to use it to get away?" Elvie glanced at Fayez. His expression went blank, so he was wondering it too. They'd been in their private rooms, but that didn't mean they couldn't be monitored. Was Trejo watching them? Was this a test? "Unfortunately," Elvie said, choosing her words carefully, "the Falcon was deeply, deeply compromised." Fayez followed suit. "I got a new foot, toenails and all, but that ship's still in pieces." Teresa's expression shifted, but Elvie wasn't sure what it had shifted into. Elvie kept going, saying the things someone who had never thought of fleeing would say. "I really don't think it'll come to evacuation. None of those ships are even going to get close to the planet, and everything Admiral Trejo has at his disposal will be used to keep us all safe." "Maybe you should put a push on the repairs, then," Teresa said harshly. "As if there is anything I would rather do," Elvie thought and chuckled. "Maybe I should," she said as they entered the dining hall. Teresa finally had to go her own way. It felt like escaping something. Fayez put his arm around her waist and let himself be guided to their table. "That was uncomfortable," he said. "Don't read too much into it," Elvie said as they found their chairs. "Also, don't forget it." The dinner proceeded. The conversation stayed on safe ground. Elvie put Holden and his role in Cortázar's murder plot out of her mind. She didn't think of it again for weeks, and by then, things were already out of control. "Holden escaped?" Illich shouted. The speaker on her hand terminal overloaded a little, flattening his voice. She tried to bring herself back to consciousness. It was hard to believe she'd actually drifted off, but the dreams still had their claws in her. "The attack," she said. "They're here. They're fighting right now, and Holden's free." She sat up on her bed. She was still wearing her uniform, though it was creased from sleep. She rubbed the back of her neck with an open palm. Holden was out of his cell at the same moment that the underground strike force was engaging with the defense grid. There was no way that could be coincidence. Somehow he'd known it was coming, and he was getting out before the bombs hit the state building. Her gut clenched. The fear that had been growing since the enemy's gambit became clear tightened her gut. "I'm going to die. Fayez is going to die. We're not going to see dawn." "Tell Trejo," she said. "You need to tell Trejo. He's busy commanding the defenses. Holden stunned the guards. They're still unconscious." "Jesus Christ," she said. "What do you want me to do about it?" Illich stammered for a few seconds. "I don't know what to do." "Secure the pocket nuke that's in the same facility. Then get a security team and start looking for him," Elvie said. "Yes," Illich said. "Right." He dropped the connection. Fayez was sitting on the edge of the bed, his eyes wide and alarmed. "That man," Elvie said, "is not great in a crisis. I'm starting to think he's got the wrong job." "Elvie," Fayez said. "Holden. Teresa." It only took a moment. Shit. She went for the door, Fayez close behind her. The air was cold and wet and stinging. It numbed her face instantly. Flakes of snow swirled down from the sky like ashes from a huge fire. The distant ground-based railguns made a constant rolling thunder, and the clouds flickered red and orange in the north as they fired. Far above the clouds, a battle was going on. Elvie put her head down and ran. Fires came along just behind her, his footsteps falling in and out of sync with her own. An alarm sounded, screaming out across the state building and its compound. She didn't know if it was about the war or the escaped prisoner. At Teresa's rooms, she pounded the door with her fist and shouted the girl's name, but the only answer was frantic barking. The thunder of the planetary defenses grew louder, almost deafening. Something terribly bright happened somewhere above the clouds and turned the white, snow-struck landscape to noon for 3 long seconds. "We need to take shelter," Fias said, and Elvie kicked Teresa's door. Fias did too. It seemed like it wouldn't be enough. They'd beat themselves against it forever and never get through. And then the frame gave way. The door slammed inward, and Teresa's dog ran out into the night, barking madly. "Get inside!" Fias shouted. But Elvie was already following the dog. It bounded through the fallen snow, throwing up ice like dust. Its bark was urgent, and it led Elvie on. She couldn't feel her feet well, and her wounded leg burned and ached, but one foot went in front of the other. Snowfall and the battle light had changed the gardens into a vision of hell. She didn't know where she was, didn't know where the state building was, couldn't tell where she was going except that she was following the trail of paw prints and broken snow. She should have gotten a gun. She was a major. Someone would have given her one if she'd asked. Better, she should have called Illich and the security team. It was too late, though. She couldn't turn back, and she had to believe that the James Holden she knew would listen to her, would hear her, would stop whatever his plan was before the girl got hurt. The dog vanished into the gloom ahead, barking and howling. She'd been stupid. She'd been overworked. Duarte and Cortázar and the war and the things from beyond time and space, they'd overwhelmed her, and she'd lost sight of the girl who was right in front of her and the man who'd planned to kill her. All the panic and the fear and the driving need to flee distilled into this moment, this doomed rush, the snow, and the howls of the dog. And voices. "Stop!" Elvie shouted, and her voice was hoarse. "Holden! Stop!" The trail led almost to the fence. High in the darkness, the mountain beyond the state building reared up, transformed by snow and darkness into a vast gray wave. And there, in a snow-filled gully, James Holden stood in a black guard's uniform. His hair was wild, and his skin was pale except for 2 bright red patches at the cheeks where the cold had bitten him. The dog capered and yapped at his side, and Holden raised a hand like he was seeing an unexpected friend at a cocktail party. But there was another voice, Teresa's voice, scolding the dog and telling it to be quiet. "Holden!" Elvie gasped. Now that she was slowing down, her side hurt like someone was stabbing her. "Holden, stop! Don't do this! You don't have to do this!" "Do what?" he said, and then, "Are you okay?" "Let her go. It won't fix anything to hurt her." Holden's forehead furrowed, and for a moment she could see the young man he'd been the first time she'd met him, decades ago on a different planet. She held tight to the chance he might still be the same man, somewhere deep inside. "Hurt who?" he said, and pointed at Teresa. "Her?" "I know what you did," she said, trying to catch her breath. "I know you put Cortázar up to it." "We have to go," Teresa said. Elvie noticed for the first time that the girl was doing something in the gully, digging away a drift of fallen snow. Holden's sleeves were crusted with ice where he'd been doing the same. She's just a kid, Holden. Whatever your plan is, she doesn't have to be part of it. I'm more part of her plan at this point, he said. We have to go, Teresa said. We don't have time for this. Muskrat, shut up! The dog wagged, happily ignoring the order. Footsteps came from behind Elvie. Fires stumbling through the snow. A deep rolling sound came from the north. The earth trembled, and the railgun flashes stopped. Without their voices, the night seemed weirdly silent. What's going on? Fires said. I'm leaving, Teresa said. I'm trading their prisoner for a way out, and I'm leaving. His ship is coming for us right now, and we have to get to the rendezvous. He tried to get you killed, Elvie said. You can't trust him. I can't trust anyone, Teresa said, and the weariness and bitterness in her voice belonged to a much older woman. No, Holden said. That wasn't about Teresa. That was about you. Hey, Fires. Hey, Holden, Fires said, and dropped to his knees at Elvie's side. Snowflakes landed on his hair and stayed there, unmelting. I don't understand. This has all been about you, Holden said. Literally, from the minute I found out about the alien rip-in-space thing that showed up on the Tempest, I've been trying to get Cortázar out and you in his place. All this? He gestured at the now quiet sky. I don't know anything about it. I haven't been in touch with anybody. None of it's been me. Elvie shook her head. I don't understand. I got you the job, Holden said. I'm the one who told Duarte you'd been studying what killed the protomolecule engineers. And yes, I talked Cortázar into getting himself in trouble. And then I tried to rat him out. It was the only thing I could think of that Duarte would care about enough to get rid of his pet mad scientist. And since you were the expert, you'd get the promotion. The punch in her chest was betrayal. She felt betrayed. She'd seen Segale and Trevon die because of Holden. She'd almost lost her leg, almost lost her husband, suffered through everything because of him. Why would you do this to me? I wanted to get someone sane and rational in charge before Duarte did something stupid that we couldn't take back. He lifted his hands and then let them fall. A gesture of powerlessness. I'm not sure it worked, but it was all I could do. Teresa stood up. Her black sweater was white with ice. We can get through. The space is big enough. But the second I'm off the ground, security's going to know it. We can't stop running once we start. Holden nodded, but his eyes were on Elvie. I'm sorry, he said. Make up for it. We're here. Take us with you. And in the other half of her mind, the labs, the pens, the Falcon and all the data she'd acquired with it, still waiting to be sifted through. Was Ochida going to take it up if she left? Would he be better than Cortázar? Was there anyone, anywhere she'd trust with this more than she trusted herself? And the enemy, the deep enemy, had tried to hurt them already, was looking for a way. Her leg throbbed like it was reminding her of the black things between the spaces. Was someone else going to stop them? She looked at Holden's face. He was one of those men who was going to look boyish until the day he died. Fuck you for putting me in this position, she thought. Fuck you for making this the right thing for me to do. It wasn't what she said aloud. Go. Chapter 47. Naomi. Alex?
I see it, he shouted. What do we do?
A wave of disorientation washed through her, like she had started floating again without having stopped the first time. The ship jumped and shuddered around her, as she pulled up the record of Amos's mission and cross-checked. It looked real. If it was false, it was convincing. The plan was to hit the platforms and then burn hard to get away before the enemy forces could get back. She'd given them a wide window for it, adding in a surface landing and extraction. But if she didn't, and Amos really was waiting, or Jim.
Naomi, Alex asked again. What do we do?
Take out the platforms, she said. And then, first. We take out the platforms first.
If we're going to land, we have to slow down, Alex said.
She needed time. She didn't have it. The Rosie shifted hard, then fell away, slamming against her straps as the railgun fired.
Get me options, she said. Coming up, Alex said, and the thrust alert came on.
They were flying into the enemy barrage, and she was slowing them down.
Ian, tell the others to match my course. We're putting on the brakes.
She pulled up the tactical, and the drive came on, pushing her back into her couch and the coolness of the gel. She couldn't tell if it was the evasive dodging or the changes in acceleration or her own sense of doom that left her feeling nauseated, but it didn't matter. She pulled up the tactical display, ran it through the Rosie's system, and prayed to nothing in particular that a solution existed. Their information on the defense grid was pieced together from transport union ships that had moved through the system. 5 weapon platforms, flat black and resistant to radar. They were in higher orbits than the alien construction platforms, and spaced around the planet in a web that put any approaching ship in the sights of at least 2, and usually 3. They were already firing at Naomi's little strike force, and whatever technology they were using to compensate for the rounds they fired, it didn't make a heat or light plume that she could use for targeting. The construction platforms were closer to the planet, long and articulated, with filaments coming off of them like something in a microscope slide of contaminated water. They shimmered with light. There were 5 of those, too, all of them in near equatorial orbit. The plan had been to approach with the ships close together so that they would all be covered by the same defenses and dilute the incoming fire between them. Then, when they were close, the Cassius and the Prince of the Face would split off, wrapping around the spinward side of the planet while the Rosie and the Quinn cleaned up anti-spinward. Then they would all burn hard for the ring gate and the hundreds of systems beyond to hide in. That had been the plan. Now it was the same, but slower. More time in the enemy crosshairs, less chance of escaping unharmed. Ian shouted over the din of PDC fire, drive residence and thruster burn.
Cassius is requesting permission to break off. They're ready to make their run.
Confirmed, Naomi shouted. Let's do this.
With them gone, the bad guys are going to have more guns for us. Alex said. We're about to get real bumpy.
What the hell has it been up to now? Ian asked.
Walk in the park, kid, Alex said.
On her tactical display, the Cassius turned, its drive plume leaning in toward the other 3 as it slid toward the far side of the onrushing planet. A few seconds later, the Prince of the Face did likewise. As they slid away, a new bloom of fast movers jumped up from the Laconian defenses.
How many of these missiles can we take? Naomi shouted, and a voice she didn't know yelled back,
PDC's at 60%,
as if that answered her question.
We can start doing damage of our own in 80 seconds, Alex said. 79.
Lock on the construction platforms, Naomi said. Her legs felt like they were on the verge of cramping. Her monitor was throwing 3 low-priority medical alerts. She ignored them. The ship moved hard to port, fighting to get out of a railgun's firing arc. They were getting close enough that dodging after the railgun fire was getting hard.
Permission to hit their weapons, Captain.
No, Naomi said.
The construction platform goes down first.
She might die. They all might die. Even if they did, they didn't have to lose.
She fought the temptation to grab weapons control herself. The fear and the tension left her muscles trembling, and the evasive shifting was coming faster and harder. She wanted a sense of control, of being able to bend the next minutes to her will. Trusting a crew she'd barely met with everything was like flying blind.
"Prince of the Face reporting that the Cassius took a railgun hit," Ian shouted.
"How bad?" Naomi asked, already pulling up the sensor away data to see for herself. By the time Ian spoke, she knew.
"The Cassius is gone."
The odds shifted in her mind again. If the Prince of the Face was lost too, it would mean looping around Laconia to catch the surviving platforms. She'd only just taken on the risk by slowing down, and she was already paying the price. She took comms control and opened a connection to the Prince of the Face. As soon as it went through, she started talking.
"This is Naomi Nagata of the Rosinante. Kill your braking burn. Go back to the initial strategy. In fast, kill the construction platforms and burn for the gate. Do not decelerate further. Do not wait for us."
"Recon gut, Rosinante,"
a voice came back. The accent was pure Ceres station.
"Gekan ala, sesa."
On her tactical display, the Prince of the Face's drive plume died, and the ship seemed to leap ahead, rushing toward its target by burning less.
"Romiston range," Alex said.
"I don't care how much you have to dance," Naomi said. "Just get us there."
10 more fast movers coming from the defense platform," Ian said.
"PDCs are at 50.
"Alex?"
"Doing what I can," he said. "Give me 30 more seconds."
Naomi opened a channel to the Quinn.
"Report."
"We took a few rounds in engineering and our machine shop," a young man's voice answered. "We're okay for now."
"Rosinante is lining up a shot. Cover us."
"Copy that,"
the Quinn said. The Rosie slammed to port, and then again. Naomi's crash couch whirled, keeping the impacts against her back no matter what direction they came from.
"I really wish they had fewer rail guns,"
Alex said from between clenched teeth.
"At least we can dodge," Naomi said.
"We can until we can't,"
Alex said, and the Rosie stuttered under her as their own rail gun fired. She pulled up the image of the alien platform, still much too far away to see with the naked eye. Even with the Rosie's system stabilizing the image, it jumped and vibrated. Naomi leaned in, willing the shot to hit. At this distance, even a mistiming in the shot, a small, unanticipated vibration could mean they'd failed. The image whited out for a second, as an enemy missile died close enough to their line of sight to confuse the sensors. It came back in time for her to see the platform shudder and shift. The complex structure seemed to pull in, like it was wrapping itself around an injury. It thrashed once, a widespread spasm. The shimmer of lights danced along its spine and out through the structures of its arms, and then it began to unspool. Like a tight-wound thread dropped into water, it relaxed and spread. The rigid shape softened and collapsed on itself, scattering through the emptiness over a vast Laconian ocean. Bright lines of energy, like lightning or dying nerve impulses, shot along it as it grew dark and drifted apart. The Rosie shook and shuddered as the alien structure gently, gracefully died. Alex let out a sigh that was part relief and part awe. Naomi knew exactly what he meant. She tried to open a connection to the Prince of the Face to report the kill and check in, but the body of the planet blocked it, and there weren't any repeaters she could use. From here on in, she had to go on faith. Alex turned off the drive. They'd braked. If they'd kept it going, the Rosie would have started moving away from the planet again. They were in orbit now. Being on the float should have been a relief. It felt like a threat. Where's the next one? Naomi asked.
Coming up, Alex said. It's behind the horizon line now. We'll have it in 8.5 minutes.
Let's start knocking down some of these weapons platforms. See if we can get a little peace. The Rossi kicked again, and the PDC chatter was joined by the deeper, subtle thrum of the torpedoes launching. Naomi found herself grinning despite the pain. What's that? Naomi said. On the surface of the planet, near the center of one of the continents, a brightness was lighting the thick clouds from beneath. City lights. The capital. Laconia. And just north of it, a bright and burning light rising up through the atmosphere in a perfectly straight line of fire and smoke.
Huh, Alex said. That's surface-based railguns.
Were we expecting those?
First I've heard of them.
That's going to make landing a lot harder.
Yes, it is, Alex said,
and dragged the Rossi out of the path of the incoming fire.
Kind of makes you wish the pickup was a little farther from the most guarded part of the planet, really.
We'd meant to do this a long time ago, Naomi said. It looks like they built up in the meantime. She checked her maps. The city was almost beneath them now. This was as close to Jim as she had been in years. If the Prince of the Face was on time and target, there was only one platform left. On her monitor, one of the Laconian weapons platforms blew, taken out by a combination of a railgun round from the Quinn and two of the Rossi's remaining torpedoes. It would be so easy to order the drop. Fall through the rough Laconian air, make the pickup, and kill the last platform on her way out. If she was sure she'd make it. If she was so convinced that she'd live through it that she could risk wasting everything they'd done until now. And she wasn't.
Steady as she goes, Alex, Naomi said.
A sudden bang, like a detonation, shook the ship, deafening her. She waited for the hiss of lost air, the silence of the vacuum, and it didn't come.
What was that? She shouted.
Debris hit, Ian said. We've got a hole in the outer hull.
Watch our pressure. If we start leaking, tell me.
You got it.
I've got the last one,
Alex said. Fast movers on our back, PDCs at 30%. Naomi pulled up the visual tracking. They were so close now, she could see the curve of Laconia in the scopes, the milkiness of its high atmosphere. A connection request came in. The Prince of the Face had cleared the planet and had line of sight for a tight beam. She accepted it.
Give me good news, she said.
Clari muerte, the Prince of the Face said.
Up to you now, boss.
Thank you for that, Naomi said.
Another railgun from the surface.
Another what? The Prince of the Face asked.
We're getting fire from the surface, Naomi said.
It's fine. Continue with your flight plan. Get out of here. Do it now.
Maybe etwas can do,
the Prince of the Face said. But before she could ask what they meant, Alex said,
I've got luck.
Do it, Naomi said.
The Rosinante bucked again. The railgun round left a faintly glowing trail, superheating the almost absent air that it passed through. Naomi held her breath. The railgun round touched the distant platform, and her sensors went dead. She pulled up the ship status. All the sensor arrays had tripped to safe. Overloaded.
What's...
she started, and the ship screamed. She grabbed the edge of the crash couch as it whirled crazily. They were tumbling. A shockwave moved through the barely present gas out past the edge of turbopause, still strong enough to send them spinning like a kid's toy that had been kicked. The lights flickered, died, and came back on again. The bones of the ship creaked, and the roar of maneuvering thrusters filled her ears as Alex fought to bring them back to stability. The sensor arrays were still resetting, and Naomi felt the railgun rounds cracking up from the surface unseen. She waited to hear them snap through her ship. Hole the reactor. End them. When the sensor arrays blinked back, the construction platform was gone. A corona of superheated air danced where it had been, green and gold and red.
"I think they may have been making some more antimatter," Alex said dryly. "Not sure that was the best idea."
Naomi didn't respond. Something was happening on the surface of the planet. The ground defenses where the railgun rounds had originated was reading hot. Nothing was firing. She tried to connect the death of the platform with it, but the pieces wouldn't fit. Something else had happened. A connection request came. The Prince of the Face again. Naomi took it.
"Did you do something? What did you do?"
"Still had demi-holder plasma torpedoes, yeah?"
the other ship said.
"No use for. Drop them on your railgun base, okay? Clear your way. Question is, what did you do? That a nuke?"
"Nothing so trivial as that," Naomi said.
"Thank you, Prince. We're good. Now get out."
"Already gone,"
the ship said, and the connection dropped. She sent a tight beam to the Quinn. It answered immediately.
"We're seeing all enemy weapons platforms in the hemisphere disabled,"
a young man said.
"We have a half-hour window before anything cycles to this side of the planet."
"Go," Naomi said. "We have a pickup to make on the surface." They were silent long enough, Naomi thought she might have lost the connection.
"We're your escort, Rocinante. Do what you need to do, we'll be here."
"If we were rated for Atmo, we'd go with you."
"Negative, Quinn," Naomi said. "Burn for the gates. That's an order."
A moment later, the Quinn's drive plume bloomed out bright and huge, and the Rocinante was left alone in the wide sky over Laconia. Naomi looked around her. There was smoke in the air, but no alarms were going off. Her crash couch had pushed one of her medical alarms back to normal, but the other two showed elevated cortisol and blood pressure. No one was shooting at her, and it felt strange.
"Alex," she said, "are we ready to go down?"
"Checking," he said. "That debris hit fucked up our aerodynamics, but I can make it work. It'll be choppy as hell."
"Can't scare me," Naomi said. "Get us down, as soon as you can."
Below them, Laconia was in night. There was a beauty to it. Apart from a faint bioluminescence where the distant sea met the shore, the land was dark. The only light was shrouded by clouds. This was what Earth would have looked like, more or less, before the first electric light, before the first satellite, the first orbital shuttle, before Mars, before Ceres, before the Belt. It was the heart of a galactic empire, and still as bare as wilderness. Oberon and Barad Gaon had more cities. Earth had more history. Every place had the dream of what it would become. Dreams were fragile things to build with. Titanium and ceramic lasted longer.
"Captain?"
She looked over at Ian. He was a boy. He was probably older than she'd been when the Canterbury died, and she'd first set foot on the Rocinante. And he was just a boy.
"Kefilwe," she said.
"I was wondering if I could take the comms controls back," he said. It's my duty. If you..."
"Sorry," Naomi said, shifting them back to his station. "Old habit. That was rude."
"Just trying to feel useful," he said through a tentative smile.
"All right," Alex said. "We're as close as we're going to get, and more time won't help us."
"Take us down," Naomi said.
The maneuvering thrusters fired, slowing the ship and letting it drop. Alex turned them back toward the cloud-blanketed city, already carried hundreds of clicks away by the planet's rotation, tilted down the nose, and tapped his controls. The maneuvering thrusters roared again. Less than a minute later, the Rocinante hit air.
Chapter 48, Teresa.
Teresa pushed through the cold and the darkness of the flood channel, hunched down. A slush of almost frozen water and slime soaked her shoes and the hem of her pants. Clearing the entrance had numbed her hands, and now her fingers were starting to hurt. Not bringing gloves when she left only felt like the most recent in a long line of terrible choices. Behind her, Muskrat whined. "I told you to go back," Teresa said, but the dog ignored her. If anything, she stayed closer. And behind Muskrat, the heavy footsteps and rough breath of James Holden. The slush under her feet grew thicker, more solid. A few more steps, and she was standing on solid ice. "We're almost there," she said.
"There?"
"The other side of the flood channel."
"Is that the pickup?"
"No, we have to get to the mountain."
"Mountain, right," Holden said. "Okay."
A thin oval of gray, the size of her pillow, swam out of the darkness ahead. A drift of fallen snow blocked the way out, but not enough to stop her. Teresa stamped forward, pressing the snow down, compacting it, then scrambling forward to do it again. Somewhere in the state building, an alarm was going off. The security forces alerted to her escape. She hoped that the battle would be distraction enough to lend her time.
"You're going to get soaked," Holden said.
"I'm going to get out." He was quiet after that. She scrambled out into the world. The wall of the state building was behind her, the stretch of the wilds ahead. Holden emerged more slowly, and Muskrat with him. The trees had pulled in all their leaves, and the snow stuck to their trunks like a million featureless masks. Everything was transformed. The same and not the same. For the first time, she felt a prick of uncertainty. This was her place. She knew it and how to navigate it, or at least she had until now. She headed down the first path, her breath plumed white and thick with every exhalation, and moving helped to keep the cold at bay. She wished that the flashes and roar of battle were still there, if just to help light the way. She told herself that it meant the rescue ship was almost there, and that she had to hurry. The path through the forest seemed brighter than the sky above them. The snow was thicker here, rising up almost to her knees. Muskrat huffed and pushed, forging a path beside hers, and Holden followed along in the furrows they made. The snow was still falling, small, hard flakes that tapped against her cheeks and melted down like tears. There were tracks in the snow where animals had passed, and one of the trees had a long, fresh rip in its bark where something looking for food had dug deep into the hibernating flesh. Teresa wondered if animals did that on other planets, or if it was only here. For a moment, the implications of what she was doing rose up and threatened to overwhelm her, but she pushed the thoughts aside. She wasn't going back now, not even if she could. Something moved in the trees to her left, and she felt a moment of panic. A bone elk leaped across the path and away, the exoskeleton of its legs clattering like stones rolling down a hill. It was nothing. She made what she thought was the right turn, and the path grew steeper. The mountain loomed up in the darkness, not really a mountain, an artifact so ancient it was covered in stone. Or one that had been made that way. History so deep, a forest had grown over it, and seasons passed against it like days. She pushed into the clearing where the evacuation ship was supposed to land. It was wide and flat, with a slope that rose toward the distant summit on one side and a clear view of the state building on the other. In the falling snow, the buildings with their softly glowing windows seemed farther away than they were, like something seen from fairyland. With the flash and roar of the battle gone, it looked peaceful. It wasn't, but it looked that way. Behind her, Holden came to the clearing. He had pulled his arms inside the shirt for warmth, the sleeves flapping empty against his sides. He squatted down in the snow.
Are you all right?
Out of shape, he said. Next time I'm working out more. I'll convert a corner of my cell into a gym or something.
She had enough conversations with him now to know he was telling a joke, without his voice signaling that it was a joke. No one else in her social life did that, and she found it irrationally annoying. It made every exchange into a puzzle that had to be decoded to see if it was sincere or not. She pushed the irritation away. There were a lot of things people did that she'd never had to be patient about. It was time to start learning that skill.
This is where I met him, she said.
Met him?
Timothy, she said. Amos.
Oh, Holden said and looked around.
For a moment he was silent.
It's beautiful. I mean, weird, but also beautiful. I wish I'd seen more of Laconia, not just the gardens.
Me too, Teresa said, and stared at the low gray sky.
Where are they?
Without the trees to shelter them from the wind and the effort of pushing through the snow, the cold grew sharper. Holden seemed to fall in on himself, arms wrapped tight, head resting on his knees. Muskrat went and sat beside him, the dog's wide brown eyes concerned. Teresa knew about hypothermia. She didn't feel bad herself, but Holden was older, and he'd been in prison for a long time. It had weakened him. She thought about going and sitting beside him, too. She remembered stories about people caught in the wilderness making structures in the snow to capture and share body heat, but she didn't know how that worked. She wondered if the evac ship came and Holden was already dead, what they would do with her. A blast of frigid air came down the mountain, pulling the top layers of snow up in brief whirlwinds. Teresa took a step toward Holden. Maybe she could take him to Timothy's cave, just until the ship came. Take him there, and then she could come back herself and lead the rescuers to him. If there were rescuers. If this worked. A trickle of black dread seeped through her body. This had to work.
I'm sorry you had to find out that way, Holden said.
Teresa looked at him. She couldn't remember if delirium was part of hypothermia, but it seemed like it might be.
Find out about what?
The whole killing you thing. Pushing Cortázar into it. It wasn't personal.
Teresa looked at him. A miserable man hunched in the snow. She knew that she should feel angry. She was angry all the time these days, and at everyone. She tried to summon up the rage, but it didn't come. She could only feel sorry for him. Holden took her silence as something it wasn't. He kept talking.
It wasn't supposed to get you hurt. I was putting a wedge between your father and Cortázar, that was all. You were the only thing that would do that. Everyone saw how much he loved you.
Did they?
Holden's nod was slow to start, like he was already turning into ice.
There was a woman I knew. Long time. She used to say you can't judge anyone by what they say. You have to watch what they do.
She said that.
I recognize the irony. But I watched what she did, too. How she made people like her. How she made them afraid. I'm not good at the second one. But I was pretty good at the first part.
Because of her?
In part. And I watched what your father did with you. How he treated you. And I used that.
I'm sorry.
Yeah?
Not repentant, he said.
Just sorry.
So sorry that you'd do it again the same way?
I'd try to move it along a little faster, but yes. Sorry that it was my best move.
Teresa looked up into the clouds again. The snow swirled down at them. Her fingers and toes were starting to burn. There still wasn't a ship. It's okay, she said. I knew you were the enemy. You did what enemies do. It's worse when it's your friends.
That's true, Holden said. And then, cart's coming.
She listened and heard it too, the electric whine of a security cart. The way the snow muffled sound, it had to be close. She looked around for some place to hide, some way to escape, but the snow would give her away no matter where she went, and Holden couldn't run anymore.
Stay calm, she said. I'll handle it.
A moment later, Holden rose to his feet, and Muskrat looked up at him, concerned. The dog's expression said, Maybe you should sit back down. You don't look steady. Holden scratched between her ears. There were voices now. She made out two of them, maybe a third. Down the path that led back to the state building, a light began to dance. Headlights on a cart moving fast through the fallen snow. Voices calling her name. The cart rolled into the clearing and stopped. Three men in it. Two wore guard uniforms like the one Holden had stolen. The third was Colonel Illich. Illich leaped out, pistol raised at Holden.
Put your hands up, Illich shouted. Now!
Okay, Holden said, poking his arms back into his sleeves, then lifting them.
I'm not armed. Teresa, get in the cart.
No, you get in the cart, Teresa said. I'm not going anywhere with you. Illich turned toward her, shock in his eyes. She watched him understand, confusion slipping seamlessly into rage.
Get in the fucking cart, Illich said. Or you'll shoot me?
The two guards looked at each other nervously, but Illich walked toward her. He kept his pistol trained on Holden, but his eyes were on her.
No, I won't shoot you, but I'll put a guard on you every moment for the rest of your life.
You don't control me anymore, Teresa shouted, and Illich laughed.
Of course I do. That is literally my first duty. Make sure the girl eats, make sure the girl sleeps, educate her, socialize her. I am your fucking mother, and I am telling you to get your spoiled, egotistical, self-centered ass into that goddamn cart.
I won't, she said, and crossed her arms. Illich seemed to deflate. For a second, she thought she'd won.
You will, he said, or I'll kill your dog.
He lowered his pistol a degree. It was like the volume of the world turned down. Teresa could still hear everything, but at a distance. She waited for the gunshot, sure it was coming, that she wouldn't be able to stop it. Don't do it, I'll come, tried to find its way to her throat, but she was frozen. Her throat wouldn't work any better than her legs. Illich shook his head once, just a centimeter one way and then the other. He turned to check his sights on Muskrat. But the shot that rang out wasn't from him. Back at the cart, something was happening. Teresa couldn't tell what it was at first. Her mind tried to make it into the two guards wrestling with each other, except one of them toppled out the side of the cart and fell into the snow. The violence in the cart kept going on. In her peripheral vision, she saw Holden step in front of Muskrat, his arms still lifted, but Illich wasn't paying attention to that now.
Captain Erda, report,
Illich barked, but no one answered. Instead, the guard still in the cart shrieked once. Something wet snapped, and the screaming stopped. Everything was perfectly still. Illich took a step toward the cart, then another. Timothy boiled out from the shadows behind the cart, sprinting through the snow. His eyes were black, his skin gray. Illich fired, and a smear of blackness appeared on Timothy's bare ribs. He hit Illich like he'd fallen from a great height, and sent the man's legs up in the air as Timothy bore his torso down into the snow. It had all happened too fast. She didn't know if the pistol belonged to one of the guards or if he'd taken it from Illich, only that it looked smaller in Timothy's hand.
Muskrat barked happily and wagged her tail, scattering the snow. Holden slowly let down his arms.
Amos?
Timothy, Amos, stood up over Illich and went perfectly still for a moment. Then he said,
Hey, Cap, you look like shit.
Below him, Illich gasped, the wind knocked out of him by the violence of Timothy's charge.
You've been prettier yourself one time and another. Well, you know how it is.
Amos turned his dark eyes to her and nodded down at the snow where Illich lay, still wheezing.
Hey there, Tiny. Is Guy a friend of yours?
Teresa started to say yes, and then no, and then she understood what he was asking. No, she said. He's not on my side.
All right,
Amos said, and fired the pistol twice. The muzzle flash was the brightest thing in the world.
How did you find us?
Holden asked, swaying on his feet.
This asshole, Amos said. I've been tracking him every time he came out from the compound over there. Figured sooner or later I'd get a shot at him. You made a good distraction.
Did you have to kill him?
Holden asked.
Just evening up the score is all. Are you sure you're okay, Cap? You seem kind of fucked.
A dozen questions pressed at Teresa's mind. Where have you been living? How did you survive without any of your things? How badly are you hurt? Why aren't you dead? But what came out of her mouth was, Aren't you cold? Amos looked at her, thought about the question. Snowflakes were landing on his bare chest and melting there. The hole in his ribs, where he'd been shot, wasn't bleeding. After a moment, he shrugged.
I'll live.
Before Teresa could say anything more, a powerful, deep roar came from somewhere high above them. Her first thought was that they'd started an avalanche. She imagined herself and all the others wiped away by tons of snow rushing down the mountain. But then she saw the lights in the sky. Amos took her elbow, leaned close, and shouted in her ear,
We should get back to the tree line!
She let herself be led, Holden and Muskrat following close behind, as a huge ship fell from the sky. The plumes of its maneuvering thrusters melted the snow in the clearing away in an instant and set the security cart rolling. Teresa huddled back among the dormant trees, her hands over her ears, until the roaring stopped and Amos tapped her shoulder. The ship was a fast attack frigate, a very old Martian design. Its sides were a patchwork of different plating materials. Steam rose all around it, and the cooling metal and carbon silicate lace ticked and popped. Teresa walked out toward it with a sense of awe and joy and profound accomplishment. She'd done it. The airlock opened, and a man in no kind of uniform looked down into the darkness and the mist and the snowfall.
Who's there?
The man's voice called.
Alex?
Holden shouted. Almost conversationally, the voice said,
Well, holy shit.
A rickety metal stair ladder descended. Holden went up first, his steps unsteady at first, but more sure the higher he went. Muskrat paced at the bottom of the stair anxiously.
I don't know, Teresa said to her. This is why I told you to stay in my rooms.
Go on up, Amos said. I got this.
Teresa put her hands on the bright metal and climbed up toward the hands of strangers reaching out to help her aboard, and behind her, Amos, balancing without his hands because his arms were filled with dog. The black wound on his side didn't appear to bother him. The man waiting for them laughed when he saw Muskrat, and the dog wagged uncertainly at first. The locker room seemed to be on its side, Holden and a bald, dark-skinned man embracing and grinning at each other. Amos hauled up the ladder, and the airlock door closed behind her. She'd practiced for this moment. I'm Teresa Duarte, and I'm giving you back this prisoner in exchange for passage out of Laconia. Now that it had arrived,